All right, tonight is actually a special night for me. We have a very special guest, at least special to me, here, all the way from Pittsburgh. When I first met this young man, I had known his mother from way years ago and his uncle from high school. And we had reconnected via that wonderful medium called Facebook. And through talking to one another, we realized that we had a common problem, and that was alcoholism, except it wasn't with her, it was with a family member. And I was introduced with this young man basically through Facebook, and we got to talking. And because of our talking one-on-one back and forth, he was led to a solution of his problems, which he's going to describe tonight. This young man carries a very strong place in my heart. He's carrying this message all throughout the United States. He was in Pittsburgh, and now he's in Chicago. And he really, really does work this program. And to see a young man, I call him young, with such vigor in this program is quite humbling to me. And it really, really shows a lot of hope in my heart. And with that, I give you Mr. Nick Hamill.
Okay. I'm going to start this off with a prayer. Y'all can do what you want. Fold your hands, bow your head, shake around, wiggle your feet, all that good stuff. God, I thank you for guiding me down to Tampa. I thank you for guiding me throughout my steps and everything that I do. I thank you for bringing me around with so many people who I admire, who admire me, and so many people who I can join in brotherly and harmonious action. Amen. I am not a moderate drinker. I'm not a certain type of hard drinker. I'm a real deal, full-blown alcoholic. My name is Nick. And it's good to be here. It's good to have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body and reborn from a life which was completely devoured by a bitter morass of self-pity. Now, I can't stand those long introductions. Thank you, Toby. I really appreciate it. That was awesome. Absolutely awesome. I think that's something that they may have started in early AA is really stroking each other's egos to keep each other on check subconsciously. And I think that was probably the deal. But like Toby said, I'm from Pittsburgh, born in Fort Hood, Texas, and I now live in Chicago. And I'll get more into this later on. Here we go. Got to keep track of time here because I'll just ramble on forever. Oh, there's a clock right over there. Hot damn. All right. I don't need this. Now, I'll get more into this later on, like I said, but now I came down here to go through the steps with Toby and throughout all of this and throughout our friendship, I was able to come to the 164 group workshop that you guys always have in January. It's just absolutely fantastic. And I was so inspired by just how deep everybody's affection is for this program that I decided to take this format and start a group called 164 Pittsburgh. So it's been pretty entertaining. Now, like I said, I was born in Fort Hood, Texas. We lived there until I was about two. We came up to Pittsburgh. How's it going, man? Yeah, it's always good to see you. It was a little more personal tonight. Yeah, or personable. Anyway, we came up to Pittsburgh. We didn't really do that much moving around from place to place. We got this house. It was a perfect location. It was right by the library. There was a school right behind our house, and there was a playground and a football field. And I remember I was probably about 5 or 6 years old, and our family, I obviously have a mother and a father. I have an older brother and an older sister. And when we were younger, our family would go down to this football field that was behind our house. We'd take the dogs down there. We'd let them run around and have a good time. But one of the things that I really remember is, you know, how Bill Wilson in his story talks about how he remembered the preacher on the hill and his grandfather and this and that. I remember looking up at a starlit sky and just being in awe. And I remember that feeling was the same feeling that I had when I went through the steps. I believe that I had a spiritual experience then, but I had no idea how to identify it. And as soon as the thought came to mind that this might be God, and this feeling might have come from a spirit of the universe, I was immediately turned off from it. And I turned myself off from it for a long time because I didn't like the idea of God that my parents put on me whenever I was growing up. And I never felt that I could relate, which was just pretty much the moral of my story. Can never relate to anybody. So anyway, fast forward a couple years, we were playing hide and go seek with some of the neighbors, and there was this one neighbor in particular. He was 12 or 13 years old. Anyway, we were playing hide and go seek, and he told me to hide with him in this tool shed. He ended up putting a pair of hedge clippers up to my neck, saying, "If you don't do this, I'm going to kill you." So I did that so he wouldn't kill me, and I was 7 or 8 years old, something like that. So anyway, I instead of telling my parents, because he didn't tell me that I couldn't, you know, tell my friends or anything, so I told my friends, and my family found out, yada, 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 and we went to court. And since this had already happened before and his parents weren't really doing anything about it, I ended up winning a large settlement that was to be put in a bank account until I turned 18, and that was about the sum of $150,000. So, later on, I'm half, I come from a Slovak and Lithuanian descent. I'm half Slovak, half Lithuanian, so I've been doing Slovak and cultural folk dancing since I was about 8 or 9 years old, and I'd like to be able to just tell you, like, I'm a rock star, because that's what I did. I was in a band for a while, but I also play accordion, so I have to be honest about that. Yeah. So anyway, I am not. I don't mean to brag or anything, and I really don't. I don't mean to brag, and I don't mean to rub anything in anybody's faces, but I am a musician. That's what I do. Any instrument that I play, I've picked up and I've learned, okay, that's where this note goes, and that's where this chord is, and I've just always been so consumed by music and just know everything about it. So I ended up going to school. I was homeschooled because I was so screwed up because of the whole, you know, molested thing, and I was homeschooled until ninth grade, and I said, I really want to go back to school because this just isn't doing it for me. So I went back to school. It's really, really hard for me to relate to anybody because I had just been in my house doing the homeschool deal. And some families can do it successfully with successful kids. My family couldn't because I just had that problem where I just could never relate to anybody, and I didn't like that idea of God that my parents put on me. So, and all the kids that we knew were Catholic homeschoolers, and I didn't want to interact with anybody. So I went a long time without really having any friends. And then I get into high school, in Mount Lebanon High School in Pittsburgh. It's like 2,000 kids in a building at once. It was friggin' ridiculous. So anyway, I started acting out. I got into some trouble in ninth grade, nothing too major. And I had already had my first drink. I had my first drink when I was 9 years old. We were at a reception for one of these folk dance deals, and you know, this lady brings out a tray of, you know, little cups of Jell-O, and I'm like, I'm on top of the freaking world. I'm 9 years old. I love Jell-O. Like, and nobody's taken up on this. Like, hell yeah. So I do about 6, 7, 10 of these things, and I think that I have food poisoning. And I go up to my mom, and I don't want to die, so I tell my mom that I just had all of this Jell-O, and I think it might have been, you know, food poisoning or something. So So she said, no, you're not, you know, food poisoning, Nick, you're drunk. And as the, whenever I found out that I wasn't going to die because it wasn't food poisoning, I was there. I was loving that. That was the first time that I... I guess you all know how it is. I'll explain it, though. It was the first time that I never... It was the first time in a long time that I didn't hate myself. It was the first time in a long time that I didn't feel like jumping off of a bridge, because it just didn't matter anymore. I was under the influence of something that changed my perspective of how I look at life. And that's all I needed to know. So the next chance that I got, I hopped right back on it, man. So anyway, 10th grade comes. I go to school at a downtown Pittsburgh. It's called Pittsburgh's High School for the Creative and Performing Arts. And I go down there and I audition on accordion. And they say, well, we don't really have an accordion major here, but if you can learn how to play this upright bass, you'll do fine. So I learn how to play upright bass in about 2 weeks. And after this 2 weeks was up, I started playing in the orchestra, and we played West Side Story, which I don't know if you guys have ever seen West Side Story or heard it, but the bass line for that whole musical is just ridiculous, and that's my music deal. My parents got an apartment in downtown Pittsburgh since we didn't have residency. We lived in the suburbs. And I would spend many a night there, and me and my friends would have parties. And my buddy Alcohol would come along, and he'd make sure I was feeling all right. And in 10th grade is... since I knew all these kids from all over, you know, this city, within the city limits, I knew a lot more kids who didn't just drink alcohol. And out of respect for Alcoholics Anonymous and out of respect for all you people in here, I will mention that I was under the influence of cocaine for quite a long time. And I say out of respect because there's a deal in here about personal identification. I want y'all to identify with me as much as you can. But, I started dabbling with cocaine, started getting in a lot of trouble, got kicked out of Kappa because I just didn't give a damn about the grades or this or that. And I'll tell you what, I could play guitar like a sumbitch whenever I was under the influence of that stuff. So anyway, I got kicked out. Went back to school at Mount Lebanon. My parents sent me to rehab. Came back, got kicked out of school. Went to a secondary school. Came back to Mount Lebanon, got kicked out again. Went back to a secondary school and got my high school diploma. And that's pretty much what it felt like. It just felt like the whole thing was just over and done. That was pretty much it. And towards the end of high school, I got into a band. I was a lead vocalist and a rhythm guitarist of a heavy metal band. We called ourselves Revelation, and apparently there's a whole bunch of different bands called Revelation across the U.S., so there's really no hope for that dude. I was living the life, and I turned 18. I got that, you know, all that money that, you know, was promised me when I was whenever I won that lawsuit. I immediately bought an 07, because that's when I turned 18. I turned 18 in 2007. I bought a Mini Cooper S 6-speed manual transmission. I bought all kinds of crazy guitar equipment, recording equipment, this and that, and butt sex, ton of cocaine. I was living the life, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and it's all fun and games until someone gets pregnant, and that's exactly what happened. Oh man, yeah, no, true story. Oh, we're going to have some fun tonight. Now, a couple years before I turned 18, I was 16, obviously. And And I started noticing whenever I, was going back to high school at this and at this other place, and I just gotten kicked out of this high school that I really wanted to go to, and I started saying, okay, well, everybody's saying that if you stop doing cocaine for a little bit, for a couple weeks, and you go back to it, you'll get the same effect that you got when you were, when you first started doing it. So I was like, hell yeah, I'll try doing this. So I tried quitting for a couple weeks, and I got about 5 hours in, and then I realized, okay, well, I remember seeing something on a movie or a TV show, I forget what, something about Alcoholics Anonymous. So I did community service at this church, and this guy directed me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And God bless these people, That was 7 years ago, 7 or 8 years ago. And I walked into this meeting, and the first thing that anybody ever told me to do was, you should really come up with an alias so they don't really know who you are. So I came up with an alias. My name was Rick, and I stuck around for a couple weeks, and I actually saw somebody who I'd known from outside of meetings, and he said, why are you saying your name is Rick? So immediately, because of that, or because of me, I don't know, it doesn't matter at this point, I felt like I had been figured out. I felt that somebody had, that even though it was just something stupid and ridiculous, I felt that this person really knows who I am. And I hated humility, and I hated being humble. I just hated that because I'm Nick Hamill. I'm this rock star. Don't you see how much money I have? Don't you see all of this? So anyway, I went back out, and it was a whole bunch of trial and error, and for a month, out for six, in for 2 months. And regardless of how much time I spent in the fellowship at one time or another, I was never able to get any more than 2 or 3 days because I was given no solution from anybody at any time. So, yada, yada, yada. I'm 19 years old, and I have a son on the way. And I keep on saying throughout the entire pregnancy, okay, well, I'll stop. Okay, well, I'll stop. My dad would get pissed off. He'd say, you piece of crap, why are you still doing this? Why don't you stop doing this? You need to be a good father. You need to be this. You need to be that. And slowly but surely, I started hating myself more and more and more and more and more and more. And there was this part in Bill's story where he talks about staring in his cabinet, looking at stuff that he was going to use to poison himself, cursing himself for a weakling. And I just, doing that day to day, just wishing, God, when are you going to finally take some initiative and just get me off of this place, man? Like, come on, this is the one thing that I want. So I turned my back on God for a little bit, trying to go to meet it, trying to be in a 12-step program and turning your back on God. That doesn't really work. We say God a couple times in here. Yada, yada, yada. Here's my definition of hopelessness. Towards the end of my alcoholism, of my active alcoholism, I was working at a bakery night till 5 in the morning. I had a wife living at home who would continually cheat on me all the time, who was screwing some guy right next to wherever my son was sleeping, and I didn't have any courage to do anything about this. My attitude was, look, okay, you can do whatever you want with whomever you want, just please don't leave me. Don't leave me. And on top of, wanting to kill myself, but hating myself even more because I wouldn't just take the initiative and just blow my brains out. One night I am smoking a joint. My son's in the back seat. I've got this miscellaneous bag of pills that I didn't know what the hell was in there. Drinking Jägermeister, because that's my stuff, man. I'm driving around with my son in the back seat, just not wanting to go cop, not wanting to go cop dope. But that's just how it was. And I just remember feeling like everybody that was around me was cursed. And then looking at my son and just knowing for a fact, everybody that is around me is just doomed, completely doomed. So one day on February 19th of 2010, I call up an old friend because I didn't like getting under the influence by myself anymore. I wanted to be with somebody whenever I was doing it. So I called up an old friend, and he was in and out of 12-step programs too for a long time. Every time I'd relapse, I'd call him, or every time he'd relapse, he called me. And screw this, and then we'd get together. So anyway, this time was a little different because he actually wanted it. He's not in anymore, and I'll explain a little bit why. But at this point, I was just done. And whenever he got in the car, because he said, we'll get it in together. So anyway, he got in the car, and he just said, look, I don't do this anymore. I've really, I'm just done. So anyway, I just start bawling because it's somebody that I can actually relate to. It's not just, you know, this room full of people where, you know, this guy's saying something that I cannot relate to because I've never gotten a DUI or I've never been in jail or this has never happened. And it's just the first time that I personally knew somebody who was just like me, who was getting it, who was actually starting to make a beginning and living life. And so anyway, we go to a meeting that night, and I make a decision. You know, okay, well, let's see, what was I screwing up? What was I screwing up for the past 4 or 5 years? Well, I wasn't going to 2 meetings a day, so I'll do 2 meetings a day. So I started doing 2 meetings a day, and I just get addicted to phone numbers. I really do. And I remember my mom mentioning something about her alcoholic lawyer friend in Florida. She had brought him up millions of times, and I just, no, I'm not going to call him. No, I'm not going to call him. No, mom, I don't need help. I can handle this on my own. So anyway, after I get addicted to phone numbers, I decide to give this fellow a call. And we become friends on Facebook, and then I type up whenever I have 100 days. I'm like, 100 days clean today. Yummy. And he says, that's awesome, Nick. What step are you on? And I say, I'm almost on step one. And oh my gosh. So, and here's the deal, is I got this word serenity tattooed right here whenever I was, you know, a week sober this time around. And I was like, yeah, serenity, 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 serenity. And I figured if I said it enough and if I got it tattooed on my arm, it was bound to come true. You know, 90 days later, just insanity, 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 insanity. So I figure, okay, well, if I get this tattooed on my arm over here, then anyway. Do you see what I'm dealing with? Okay. This fellow says, which seemed like a novel idea, he said, why don't you come down to Tampa? Get yourself a big book. Stop going to that problem fellowship. And I don't need to mention what it is. get your big book. Come down to Tampa and we'll work you through the steps in a weekend. And don't you know that it takes at least 12 years to finish working the steps thoroughly? Don't you know? There are some groups out there that completely take, you know, words of, you know, these words and just redefine them. Like, oh, anonymity? Oh, that's not what it actually means. This is what it actually means. Or thorough. You know, thorough means take a really, really long time. So anyway, after having this conversation with myself for a while, I say, well, you know what? I would like to enjoy the Florida sunshine. I could really use a vacation. So I get myself a big book. It was $6.80, and he told me to listen to this crazy speaker. His name's Chris R. He's from Florida, and I just, after listening to this guy, the way that he spoke was exactly the way that I needed to hear something, because it was finally like number one, somebody was calling me out on all of my crap, which was perfect, which nobody had ever done. Everybody just said, oh, it's okay, Nick, just keep coming back. Just, I like to call it the waltz, the 1-2-3 out, 1-2-3 out, just, and that's it. But the way that this guy speak was just with so much power. And it was like, not only was somebody calling me out on my shit, but he was completely on my side, and just, I could feel his soul on the other side. So anyway, come down to Tampa. And this guy says to me, have you read the front flap of this book? And the story of how many thousands of men and women are recovering from alcoholism. Well, that's not what it says. And that he finally pointed out the word to me, that it's this word that says recovered. And I was just always under the assumption that, you know, this was going to be an all-life deal, like an all-life battle. That I'm never going to win, and I'm never going to get any peace and serenity. I always thought that by coming to meetings, the only thing that I was trying to achieve within myself is being clean and just not wanting to kill myself. That's all that I ever wanted. But, you know, this guy did something with me that nobody had ever done. He had sit down with me one-on-one. He had the same book in his hands that I had in mine. And we were just going through it. And I'm going to flip to page 11 here. Y'all can follow along if you want. You have enough time to start doing this. I saw that my friend was much more than inwardly reorganized. He was on different footing. His roots grasped new soil. And I realized right then, whenever I started talking with this guy and started relating with him and started saying, okay, well, this is what it was like for me. This is what it was like for me. I realized that it wasn't just some fancy pants crap that I used to hear a lot of times in therapy. It's not just little crappy tools to use whenever this problem arises or this problem arises. Like the way that these people are whenever these people work their steps is, my whole life is completely changed, completely and utterly. I'm sure you guys hear it all the time here. And it says it in the doctor's opinion. You know, a new way of looking at life. You know, there's the first commandment says, "I am the Lord thy God; thou shalt have no other gods before me." And I don't. Emmett Fox kind of takes me off sometimes, but there's one thing in this book that he wrote that says, "What if a way to interpret this commandment is the way that I have been looking at life the entire time that I've been on this earth? What if this is completely wrong? What if everything that I think I know about God is wrong?" And that's what this passage means to me. And my friend, whenever we were going through the book, my friend promised that when these things were done, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator, that I would have the elements of a way of living which answered all of my problems. Belief in the power of God, plus enough willingness, honesty, and humility to establish and maintain new order of things were essential requirements. Those were just promises that I had never heard. You know, I always figured, you know, I'll go to 90 meetings in 90 days, and you know, these 9-step promises are going to happen. And that didn't work. That did not work. But there's a solution. You know, I did not like the self-searching, the leveling of my pride, the confession of my shortcomings. And I don't like these things. I don't like standing up in front of a room full of people, even though this really isn't a room full. I don't like standing up in a room full of people and saying, "This is who I am. This is who I really am," because I had always had this fear that you were going to figure me out, and whenever you figured me out, you were going to do exactly what I did whenever I figured people out, is I was going to raise you up enough, just enough to bring you down. Just like that Tool song, Sober. Have you ever, I will work to elevate you, just enough to bring you down. It's a good song. but that's, I learned throughout my 9th step that that's not how normal human beings function. Now, page 34, about in the middle. For those who are unable to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether. We're assuming, of course, that the reader desires to stop. Whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the power to choose whether he will drink or not. So, whenever I saw this, whenever I was first going through the book with this guy, and he explained this to me, I finally got it. The reason I was not getting any recovery whatsoever, I mean, I'd stay clean, I don't know, for a few days, but the reason I wasn't getting any grade A recovery is because I was not doing this hand in hand with my own conception of a power of the universe underlying the totality of things. And that was just absolutely perfect. Absolutely perfect. Now, one more thing for now. Page 43 at the bottom. The alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink, except in a few rare cases. Neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. And it says somewhere else in this book. We in turn sought the same solution with the desperation of drowning men. And that's, I have to do this vigorously. I have to do this with my whole body and my whole soul. Because if I don't have depth and weight, and that's what I consider depth and weight, is all of this, a little bit of this, and just my feet grasping new soil, that's how I live. That's just how I live life. This has just been absolutely fantastic over the past 2 years that I've been living life by this book. And I can come up with a whole bunch of great ideas about how I'm going to take my will back and this is how I'm going to do it. And I try it for a little bit. I'm not going to lie. I'll stand up here and tell you I've tried it a few times. I've tried taking my will back and saying, okay, well, you know what? This person isn't treating me the way that I want to be treated. God, can I please have this fear back so I can be resentful at this person? And as soon as that starts happening, the way that the doctor's opinion describes the physical allergy to alcohol, I believe, this may be your experience, it may not, but whenever I take my will back, I have a physical allergy to my will. As soon as I take one thing back, it's all got to come back. It all has to. And whenever that happens, that's when I start living life on life's terms, which some people may think is a good thing. I think is a horrible thing. I think is a thing that I can never do successfully, that I never will be able to do successfully. I cannot live life on life's terms. This is me. I have to live life on God's terms. I have to continually ask God, okay, what's your will? What's your will this time? And this is an everyday deal for me. For me. This isn't my book, that's why I have to. It's a brand new one. I think I'm doing pretty good, though. 53. When we became alcoholics, crushed by a self-imposed crisis we could not postpone or evade, we had to fearlessly face the proposition that God is either everything or he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What was our choice to be? And I needed to be at that point. I finally needed to have that question pushed up in my face, all this time, seeing the 12 steps on the wall, years and years of just looking at it, God, I finally needed somebody just to say, okay, well, enough of this horse crap about praying to a doorknob, enough of this crap about praying to this, praying to that, are you willing to accept that God is? Are you willing to accept that God is everything? And after going through, we agnostics a little bit over the few pages that we're here, know, this book has a really good way of convincing you to believe in God. It really does. It really does. And I'm glad that it did. And I'm glad that I was pushed up to this question, because that's when I started feeling a little bit of power flow in. And the reason why I didn't have a spiritual experience of the educational variety, like we like to call it sometimes, the reason I had an upfront real spiritual experience immediately is because I went through this book immediately. It's the darndest thing. The faster you do this stuff, as long as you're doing it thoroughly, the faster the spiritual experience is going to come, and the faster we can start living. It's the darndest thing. Page 64. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. Now, I went through my fourth step. Now, obviously, I'd gotten on my knees right before my fourth step, and I had done my third step prayer. And I really felt it. I really did. It was almost immediate. After I did my third step prayer, like I said, just immediate. And then I went through my fourth step and my fifth step. And while I was doing my fourth step, this fellow, my friend, was playing, I think he was playing Call of Duty or something. It was the coolest thing. So anyway, we did my fifth step, and he finally pointed out to me my character flaws. And my personal character flaws were pretty much just like everybody else's. You know, I have a fear of abandonment. I have a fear of being alone. I have a feeling being called out on who I really am. I have a fear of success. I have a fear of failure. Just completely messed up. Six and seven. No, I don't really know what a six-step list is. That's always kind of confused me ever since I've gone through this book. It's a paragraph. Now, all it asks me of that is, okay, well, you have all this stuff here that has been completely blocking you off from the conception of God that you've always had since you were a little kid. Now, and because of this stuff, that's why you have been living selfishly, and that's why you've been living in self-centeredness, is because, you know, now I won't let people get too close unless I'm going to do something to them in return, unless I want something from them. I could never have normal relationships with anybody because of these character defects that I had. Now, am I ready to be rid of them? Am I ready to have a life just... At this time, I thought, okay, a life that's just, all right, I don't want to kill myself anymore. And it's not like that, but you know, God removed from me my character defects, but there are certain times that I want them. You know, there are some days, this doesn't really happen anymore, but there are some days that I'm so miserable that I just want to stay miserable. You know, that somebody will tell me, well, this, you can be happy if you do this. Like, no, I just want to sit in this for a while, and I just want to live in self-pity for a little bit, you know, because this is my realm of self-pity, self-seeking. Look how bad it is for me. But check this out. Look, I'm going to leave you this last piece of pie so you can see how good of a guy that I am. I'm like a freaking martyr like Jesus, dude. Like, here, put me up on a cross, you know. God. That's me. And this is going to be one of the last things that I'm going to quote from this book. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. This is what has just nailed it for me. This is what has completely just given me solid recovery of just, you know, not wanting to drink and not having the desire to drink. This is what keeps it away, is working the 12 steps, sitting down like my friend did with me, not being the victim anymore. And I've heard a lot from guys that I've taken through. Well, what if I'm not good at it? What if they don't like me? You know, I don't like people. I can't do that. I've pretty much heard, not at all, but I've heard a lot. Now, here's the deal: is if you're on a train that's going to take off and go, you know, Has anybody here seen the, I forget what that movie's called, Fast, or, I don't know, they're on some type of boat or something. It's got to stay a specific amount before it just blows up. Anyway, say if I'm on this train and it's going 3 miles an hour and, you know, this, and some genius walks up to me and says, you know, if you don't jump off this train, you're going to die. I'm not just going to be like, well, you know what? The grass doesn't really look that comfortable. And if I jump out, I don't know if I'd twist my ankle or, I mean, this is, I always ask my guys before I take them through, what lengths are you willing to go to? What lengths? I think that's a reasonable question. And I usually won't work with anybody until they say any. I'm willing to go to any lengths. So my suggestion and my, out of bitter experience and out of seeing people go out and out and out after, you know, they've been through the book and been through the process and had their own spiritual experience, you know, don't define what length you're going to go to whenever you get up to this deal. This is the most amazing thing that you can experience, not just because, you know, we're on a life and death errand. If we don't do this, we're going to die. This is the best spiritual experience that you could possibly have. Like, I tried Coke. Coke was okay. Coke was pretty good. And then I tried this stuff called crack. And it was just absolutely fantastic. That's what this was like. You know, I had my first spiritual experience as a result of doing the steps. And then I took it to somebody else. And then I sat down with them one-on-one and took them through the book. And that was it. That was it. And that's where I became alive. For the first time in my life, I can't say, you know, for the first time in years, for the first time in my life, I became alive because I finally got what, you know, my life was going to be about from there on out. It's selfless service, you know, being rid of my selfish crap. I guess I forgot my water. Being rid of my selfish crap and giving to you guys, and I will. Thank you. I'll bend over backwards to make sure that somebody gets the same spiritual experience that I got. And now it's, and you know, I was doing some reflecting before, a couple weeks ago, and I was like, you know, this, I gotta be doing something else. I gotta add on to this. So, and I'm looking for a purpose of my life. When it says, you know, our usefulness to others, how can I be useful to anybody else other than an alcoholic? This book says, throughout, the main purpose of this book is to help you find a power which will solve your problem. So what if I walk around every day, and every person that I look at, you know, the same people that I immediately resent, like people who have cooler tattoos than me, or people that have, you know, I'm down on the beach for the next couple of days, and I see some of these dudes with six-packs, I'm just like, and it's so easy to resent these guys, because they're just, I mean, I know that God kind of blessed me, but he didn't bless me like that. I know this movie Magic Mike is coming out, and I'll come check it out with you girls whenever. You know. But instead of thinking, how can I hate this guy, and how can I just completely resent this person for this reason, or resent this person for this reason, what if I start looking at every human being, and as soon as I start to resent them, think, you know, what would be a perfect thing that could happen right now to just show them to God, and show them to this ultimate power of the universe that I've been able to experience. And it's the darndest thing. As soon as I do that, the resentment's gone. It's just, it's crazy stuff. It's this whole, and I always try, I can't say always, sometimes I'll try to come up with new things, like, okay, well, the answer's not going to be in the big book this time. It's not going to be in the big book this time. And it just always has. That's just my experience with the big book, is I'll look in it, it'll say, do this, and I do it, and the problem's just taken care of itself. And other than that, other than working the steps, and I can't even call this guy my sponsor, because he's never referred to himself as that. But my friend who had taken me through the book, I just always looked up, you know, what part in the book he says to look whenever this is going on, or this or this, or write this list or do that. And he said, meeting makers make it, so make a meeting. So I made a meeting in Pittsburgh 164 group. Last I heard, it's still going, still doing good. In the beginning, we kind of had some people come in and put in their personal piece, and I said, thank you. Why don't you go take a look at that fourth step? And something, I don't know, some people wanted to do some kind of group fourth step, some group inventories. Why don't you just have a group conscience? I've had a lot of opportunity to, like Toby said, my family travels a lot, so I've had opportunities to, you know, go to Orlando, come here to Tampa, meet people in AA here, AA there, AA everywhere, and, oh, that rhymed. It's the solution here, whenever it is the solution here is the same here. It's just the same deal everywhere you go. I mean, and I can't believe that it took me so long to finally find somebody from, you know, across the country who was going to sit down with me one-on-one and take me through the book. But I'm a very blessed man, regardless of that one time that I was riding around the car, you know, all doped out, just hopeless. I went from that sad state of humanity, my bitter morass of self-pity, up into somebody who's not afraid to get in front of you and completely, this is who I am. Humbly, this is just me. And it's all right, because as long as, and I'm not really a 12 and 12 quoter, and I'll end with this, the 12 and 12 describes humility as a realization, an honest realization of who I am, followed by an attempt to make it better. So that's that. So learn it, do it, live it, love it. God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.